This is Icon Art Radio with Alan Cobb, Donna Colby, and myself, Bill Teeple. And we're interviewing again this week Randy West of the Sondheim Theater and the Arts and Convention Center. Last week we talked about the upcoming performance of God's, that was the upcoming performance of God's Will, but is now playing, I don't know where we're at this weekend.
One more weekend.
Everyone should come out and see this. I haven't gone yet, but I'm about to. Say a little, we want to talk about theater and the Sondheim. We could do many shows to kind of enliven what you're doing and what the Sondheim's all about and how Icon and the Sondheim can collaborate. I'm excited about the potential there. But I'll let you get a few words in about the upcoming spring season, summer season.
Godspell ends the spring season. We are now officially announced for our summer season. This summer we're going to do three fully mounted musicals. So there'll be a musical that'll run 2 weeks, and that's the weekend after Father's Day is when we open. And so we go, and I should mention that the weekend of Father's Day, FACT, which is Fairfield Area Community Theater, is performing in the Sondheim Center, and they're doing Pippin. So they do Pippin on Father's Day, and then Father's Day weekend, and then the following weekend, we open Open Heart, which is a musical that's still workshopping, which means it's been done, but they're still kind of refining it and changing it. And among other things, our musical director, Justin Hill, is reorchestrating it for them because they don't like their, I shouldn't say that on the radio, because they're interested in a new sound. Okay. And the way that Open Heart came to me was through a conversation with Robbie Benson and Carla DeVito. And Robbie Benson, they're both sweet, sweet, wonderful people. But Robbie Benson was a big heartthrob in the 80s. He was in One on One, which he actually wrote, which was about college basketball. And he was in Ode to Billy Joe, mm-hmm. and Ice Castles, which was a big, as we all know, sloppy romantic, iconic thing in the 80s. And then, excuse me, he by and large, well, he went to New York and he actually went into the Joseph Papp version of Pirates of Penzance, which was Kevin Kline and Linda Ronstadt and Rex Smith. Well, he replaced Rex Smith as the young heartthrob tenor, Frederick, and Carla DeVito, who had had a career coming out of the Second City Comedy Company in Chicago. She had done a national company of Hair. She had actually done Godspell. And she went in to replace Linda Ronstadt. And Frederick and Mabel play lovers in Pirates of Penzance, and they did 6 months together in Pirates of Penzance, fell in love, and 24 years later, they're still married with two wonderful children. And Robbie stopped doing musical theater and even movies as much and started directing. He has a very substantial career as both a television and a film director. And he was the voice of the Beast in Disney's animated Beauty and the Beast. So if you've ever seen the Beast, that's Robbie Benson. Both of them just really nice, wonderful people that I got to know. And they said, well, we'd love to come and do something at the Sondheim Theater sometime. And I said, well, we'd love to have you come and do something. And so they said, well, you know, Robbie wrote this musical that, you know, it's actually been published by Samuel French, but since then they did another production of it where they changed it and they liked the changes and they wanted to do one more production to see if they could really kind of take it one more step. And I said, well, I should back up and say, when I was asked by our board to ask Steve Sondheim if we could put his name on our theater, I said I would ask, but I really had no idea what was going to come of that. And so I had worked with Steve for 6 months reworking his musical Merrily We Roll Along 20 years ago, and then I directed the pre-Broadway workshop productions of that, which is how I got to know he and George Firth. And so I got a hold of Steve and I said, I have the opportunity to open this brand new state-of-the-art theater in, believe it or not, Fairfield, Iowa, and they wanted me to ask you if there was any chance that we could name the theater for you. And he said, well, I don't know, what's your vision? What do you want to do with the theater? And I said, well, we want to support the development of new work, that it's really hard to get new musicals written now. That, you know, Broadway used to have 50 to 70 new musicals a year. I mean, that they, some of them would come and go in the night, but, you know, they, but there was a lot more things premiering. They're also, you know, in defense of non-musical theater, there used to almost be a complete mix between musicals and non-musicals. Right. Now the non-musicals are almost non-existent, and that's a shame. Non-musicals have, there's probably 10 running in and around New York at any time, and they kind of have become, they've kind of been shoved into regional theaters across the country because regional theaters can afford to do non-musicals because the musicals that they're doing, by and large, in New York have become theme parks. I mean, that musicals are these, when Disney, I went to see Beauty and the Beast, and because I was a theater snob, all of the theater people were supposed to not like that because theater is supposed to be created by a creative team with a director who has a vision, and that passes down through the creative staff. Well, Disney did not do Beauty and the Beast that way. They created Beauty and the Beast like it was, excuse me, a film or a theme park ride. That they went out and Beauty and the Beast had 5 or 6 directors, it had 5 or 6 choreographers, it had all these designers, because what they did is they smorgasbord things. They said, you're really good at this, you do that, you're really good at this, you do that. And of course the Broadway community said, you can't do that. That's not the way you develop a musical. So I went there thoroughly expecting to not like Beauty and the Beast, and Margaret and I had a great time in the theater. It's a really fun musical. Then they came back after that with Lion King, and they hired Julie Taymor, who was the director, with this huge premise, and Lion King was at least as big a success, if not more, because it was created with a huge vision. Well, but, and this kind of ties clear back to, you know, Phantom of the Opera, where you have, you know, chandeliers and boats and fog, and then Miss Saigon, you got a hydraulic helicopter. You know, the mega musicals, you do Sunset Boulevard, you have to have a house with a swimming pool that comes out and goes mm-hmm. back. And what that means is Disney just did Tarzan. Excuse me. And it was not that good. Sorry. It was only okay. And yet it ran for, I think, almost a year. And it ran for almost a year because, A, they didn't have anything to replace it with, and they had spent so much money creating it that they just couldn't close it. I mean, they didn't play, I don't know where their break-even point was, but they didn't really draw audiences compared to anything else. They're having the same problem now with Little Mermaid, that it's just not clicking with audiences, and yet they still have to, they have to run these things and try to fix them, all in New York where everybody's looking at them, you know, not making that work. So the little musical has taken a thrashing. I mean, it's much harder. Now, the exception would be Avenue Q is a little musical. The Spelling Bee is a little musical. And those were kind of off-Broadway and jumped over, and they're now out on national tours. And that's great that little musicals get a chance to do that. Jersey Boys is kind of in the middle. It's a little bigger than the little ones, but it's not huge. But what has happened is musicals used to go out of town, that they would be put together in New York and they would go to Boston and they would play and get reviewed and learn, and then they'd go to Philadelphia and then they'd go to Chicago, and over a 6 to 8 month period they would then come back into New York, and that's become cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So what happens now is if you're creating a musical, you work on it and then you find a regional theater, which we are hoping the Sondheim Center is growing into being, is one of these regional theaters where you can come and do the work, where the emphasis is on the work. It's not on the making money from the work. I mean, it's about getting it right as opposed to getting it to pay for itself. Mm-hmm. And so I told Steve, we want to support that. We want to help develop new musicals. I said, the other thing that we want to do is we want to be connected to educating the next generation of both performers and designers. And that with the Sondheim Center, anything somebody learns in terms of lighting, sound, any technical element, the theater is designed to where what you learn there will translate to any other professional theater. It's not, we're at that level. And in terms of teaching people to sing, dance, and act, we want to teach that at a level that that experience will go outside. And that within a couple of years, we'd really like to be a major force in musical theater in the Midwest. And he said, well, if my name will help you do that, you can have my name. And so we are still currently the only Stephen Sondheim sanctioned theater in the United States, even though there are a lot of people now, pretty funny, in New York that are saying, how shameless of us to not have a Sondheim theater in New York when they have one in Fairfield, Iowa. So we're hoping to get one in New York, because there should be a Stephen Sondheim theater in New York. But
the name Fairfield, Iowa is bouncing around New York, isn't it?
You know, it's all a buzz. It's so cool that when we announced the name of the theater, we thought it was important. We really had no idea if anybody else would. And we made the cover story on Playbill.com, BroadwayWorld.com, BroadwayMania. I mean, all these people suddenly knew, and then we did the gala, and we got once again everywhere, and then we did Forum everywhere. Edges got a lot of attention. So the casting director that we work with, Michael Cassera, out of New York, says, you know, there are substantial people calling him to say, so tell me about the Sondheim Center. And the other thing that's been great is that all of the New York people who have come here love Fairfield. I mean, they get it. They eat in our restaurants. They go to our art galleries. They love the fact that we have a town square. I mean, they literally went from shop to shop to get, because, you know, where in New York, you know, where are you going to find that? You know, the fact that you can get a pretty wonderful spa experience here for very little money, or you can go to the Raj and you can get a spa experience that you can't get anywhere. I mean, they got all of that, you know, and that, you know, Iowans. They came in and they said, everybody waves. And I said, yeah, Iowans wave. They're afraid that if they don't wave and it gets too late that they might offend somebody. So we wave hoping that we know the person. They said, nobody in New York waves. So all of them have wanted to come back. And they've gone back to New York and said, you need to come to this theater because they're doing fun stuff. And so for the summer season, Open Heart was good for us because it's a developing new work and they're still working on changing it and getting it right. And that both Robbie Benson and Carla DeVito said, if you want to do it, they've played the leads twice in two of the productions. They said, we'll come to Fairfield and perform for the 2 weekends while you're doing it. So we got two pretty substantial talents to come in and work with our people. We're also launching this summer our college intern program, which is pretty exciting, which it's pretty funny. I thought I was going to have to either do an email blast or send material out to colleges to get college interns to know we exist. But because our press releases and our show releases went so wide on Playbill and BroadwayWorld.com, and that I mentioned that in the summer we're going to be starting a college internship program, that we just got flooded with college kids all over the United States that want to come here in the summer. And not only all over the United States, but I've got some just great letters from kids from Iowa that are going to college, some of them in Iowa, some of them not in Iowa, that said, if you told me there was even a possibility that I could come back to Iowa and study professional musical theater, I would have told you it was crazy. And so the idea that I can come home and do something that I thought I would have to go to one of the coasts to do is really wonderful. And so I'm just selecting today and tomorrow a combination of all 14 of them will have a technical responsibility. Some of them will not perform. Some of them will just have technical responsibility. Some of them will have a technical responsibility and will perform. So we're doing Open Heart with Robbie Benson and Carla DeVito for 2 weeks in June, and then we take a week, and then in 3 weeks in July, we're doing Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which somebody said, didn't they just do that? And I checked, and yes, they did just do that 7 years ago. So they did do it, but it was 7 years ago. But one of the reasons I picked Joseph is, first of all, we have this whole host of college kids, plus we're going to use local talent mixed with the professional talent. And Fact was going to do Annie as their summer musical, and they got the rights pulled because Annie's going to tour. So they're doing Pippin now. They had 65 kids audition for Annie that ended up not having a show that they could do. GoVap, which is a very fine program in Ottumwa, which usually does a show that involves kids, just made a decision to not do a summer musical this year. They might do a concert or a review thing, but they're not doing a big musical. So another reason I like Joseph is we'll do Joseph with a children's choir of 35 to 40 voices in it, and all those kids will sing and dance. So it's a good training program for us. And then way back when I was in San Francisco, a conservatory came to me and said, we'd like you to do something at our conservatory because you're a director choreographer, and our students have never had one person that does both jobs, and we'd like them to see what it is when it's this one person. And I said, well, I'm interested. What do you want to do? And they said, well, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Now, you have to understand, I was younger there and snobbier. And I said, well, I'm really a Sondheim guy. I'm not a big Weber guy. And they said, well, will you listen to it over the weekend? And I said, okay. So I listened to it all weekend, and I came back and I said, here's my plan. Joseph is, by and large, musical genre spoofs. There's a jazz number, there's a country number, there's a 50s number. I said, is it interesting to you if I've identified 14 different musical genres, if I assign a different Broadway choreographer, a famous Broadway choreographer, to each style, so that I'll do the jazz number in Bob Fosse, I'll do the country number in Tommy Tune, I'll do the 50s number in Patricia Birch, I'll do the Canaan Days number in Jerome Robbins. And I identified 14 pretty well-known Broadway choreographers. And I said, I can't teach your students their whole dance style, but I can get them to understand at least basically the physical differences between these 14 different choreographers. And I said, that makes it academic enough for me that there's a core that we're teaching something that I think is worth doing at a conservatory. And they said, fine. And I conceived this big, so it became a huge dance show. I mean, it just became a huge dance thing. And it was wildly popular. I mean, it sold out. They did it for 6 weeks. And then they had a play that they'd been rehearsing. They did the play, and then they canceled the next six-week slot and did it again. So they did it for a bunch of weeks. And then it caught on, and for 5 years, I had a production of mine of Joseph either playing in Northern or Southern California almost all the time, and I would go down and teach it, and it would run. And I haven't done it since I left California, which... that was in 2000, so I've been here 8 years. So it's a really, and also I came to love Joseph. I mean, I must have taught it 10 times while I was in this period of just, you know, twice a year. And actually, two of the theaters, somebody was talking about, you know, doesn't an audience get burned out on Joseph? I said, maybe, but this one theater where it was such a big thing, they do audience surveys every year to say what shows do you want to see, and Joseph, after they'd done it twice in one season, Joseph wasn't even on their list because they'd just done it. The number one show with people writing it in was Joseph, and so they double checked again and they said, do you really want us to do Joseph again? And the people said yes, and so we came back and we did it again the next year, and it broke their box office record, and they voted again, and I came back the next year and did it again, and it broke the box office record. So there really is something that's just hysterically fun with the show, and I always have said it's cotton candy. But sometimes in the summer, you know, cotton candy is okay if you don't make a diet of it.
Absolutely.
So is our version here going to have the 14 different choreographic styles?
Absolutely.
Because I feel sort of like I've taken a really amazing musical theater course this afternoon in interviewing you. I mean, you just like taught us so many things about not just your career, but how the world of musical theater works.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely fascinating.
Then we're going to close with a world premiere. A musical that's had two readings in New York and has never been performed yet, called Banjo Boys. And it's I haven't done Music Man in our first season here, and Meredith Wilson is certainly Iowa's homeboy for musical theater. Well, I get a call one day from New York saying, we've written the quintessential Meredith Wilson bio musical, and we'd like you to world premiere it in the Sondheim Center because you're the professional musical theaters in Iowa. Yeah. And I said, well, send it to me. Meredith Wilson, there's three different Meredith Wilsons in it. There's a Meredith Wilson who's in heaven, looking down on his career. There's a Meredith Wilson who's kind of 40-ish and kind of in the middle. He didn't start musical theater when he was young. And then there's a little boy, Meredith Wilson, and the first act of the musical takes place in Mason City, Iowa, and then the second act takes place in San Francisco, and the score is kind of Music Man meets Big River. I mean, it's kind of eclectic. There's a little bit of, I don't know, twangy banjo stuff, but also kind of a Music Man sound. And then it's laying in. You see parts around him that were going to lead to him finally writing Music Man. And I thought, well, how much more fun could it be than to do a world premiere, first of all, that's never been done. It'll always say world premiere at the Stephen Sondheim Center for the Performing Arts whenever it goes away from here. And it's a musical of about 18, 20 people, but I could cast a little larger. The Open Heart has six leads, and then it's really a chorus. Open Heart is about doing television sitcoms, because that's what Robbie Benson went into, is he started directing sitcoms. So there's an audience that sings and participates in audience bleachers as if they were the audience of a sitcom. And then Joseph has a lot of options for ensemble people. And then I can do Banjo Boys with as little as 16 or 14 with double casting. Or if there's people that want to do it, I could open it up and, you know, do it with as many as, you know, make it look a little bit more like a full Music Man with extra people. So I think it's a pretty exciting, eclectic thing that you have a musical that has been well performed and well reviewed, a thing that's just a, you know, Joseph is the practically the perfect summer musical, and it does give it a lot of people a chance to participate, and then closing with a world premiere. So that's where we are at this point.
Exciting. Yes. Wow. I'm so what happy that we've got you on the show.
Yeah. What an incredibly appropriate collection of
It is fun. Shows. I mean, I'm looking forward. Adam Cates, who choreographed Forum with me, is coming back to where we're co-choreographing Joseph, and then he's going to choreograph the Banjo Boys for me. Mm-hmm. And really talented. Anybody who worked with Adam really liked him, really talented guy. So we just literally are announcing this show right now. And we're announcing the summer season this week. So Mike Casero will start looking. We are going to be bringing some known talent to mix with the Midwest talent during the summer. And so we're expecting to have one or two kind of knowns in amongst all the Iowa talent. So we're really excited about it. I think it should be great fun. And the idea of starting to really train college kids. And there's slots for high school age kids if they're interested too. So really kind of laying us into the community. And the idea that my dad was a high school baseball coach for years. And a very successful one, and he always felt that he was as successful as he was because the town that he lived in had a really successful youth baseball program. And so I'm really excited about starting to train kids to, we currently have the Generation Now Show Choir, which is 18, but to get to work with a larger group of kids in the summer where you really teach dance technique and get them to move so they kind of turn on their bodies, that I think that's a good thing. First of all, if all they ever do is just go to musicals after that, they'll have a different appreciation for it. And those of them that want to continue, it's kind of a good foundation to start them with.
Well, it's very exciting to think of the Sondheim and Fairfield being a center for education and mm-hmm. just for general awareness of musical theater for the Midwest. I think it's going to happen.
Oh, thank
With
you.
Your energy, thank it's you. Going to happen.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is the thing that you didn't mention about how these kinds of things happen is that it takes some kind of nuclear power plant to drive them. And we've been privileged today to learn from the quintessential nuclear energy source. It's a phenomenal amount of work to put on a show. And I think, you know, people who haven't looked behind the scenes in the theater may not realize how what appears to be happening in a smoothly engineered fashion on stage is actually backed up by not just weeks of preparation, or in some cases months of preparation, but by half a dozen other kinds of specialists who are never seen and are doing things that take years of training and experience to be able to pull off.
I've been really lucky to work with the people that I get to work with, and I say, and it sounds cliche, and it really isn't, that I'm thrilled to get to do this work. I mean, I'm just delighted to get to work with the people that I get to work with and do what I get to do. And, you know, we're the Fairfield Arts and Convention Center is a brand new business. We're in our first year, and, you know, we're struggling some to make sure that we make good choices and that we establish ourselves in a way. But and any first year business, let alone one in the arts, is always something that you better be ready to dig in and desperately try to resuscitate every now and then to keep it going. But I'm delighted to have the opportunity to do that. And Alan mentioned earlier, and I would not on the air, before we went on the air, he asked about the musical theater program. And if I can take just a minute, the original idea of the Fairfield Arts and Convention Center, there was a group of people who got together, and at that time, FACT was doing their musicals out in the fairgrounds, and, you know, it sometimes was out loud, sometimes it would rain and they'd have to stop, sometimes, you know, you'd be too close to the animals. And so a group of people decided that Fairfield needed a place to do theater, do concerts, do meetings, do parties. I mean, that there really wasn't a facility that was accessible to do those kind of things in Fairfield. So they originally started raising money for a community center with a theater in it. And as they, Fairfield being Fairfield, as they raised this money, as this vision evolved, it became a better theater and a better building and a better building. And then right down toward the end, and their whole idea was always to just rent the building. We'll build the building and Fairfield will rent it and Fairfield will have a place to do the things that they want to do. Well, we have a mortgage on the building. And so we have a certain amount of debt that we still are paying for. The building itself, when I was the theater coordinator for the city of Phoenix, which I did for 5 years, I had two theaters and an educational building, but the city of Phoenix paid all my maintenance charges, paid all my utilities, you know, maintained all three buildings. I just had to do programming that didn't lose money. Well, we have a challenge at the Fairfield Arts and Convention Center to make the building pay for itself and do programming that pays for itself. And so when they looked at just renting the building, what we would have to charge the Fairfield community to be able to pay the mortgage and keep the building open was so substantial, you know, nobody could afford it. So the idea, they did another study that said a town of 10,000 can't support that building, can't pay for that building. So they had to have some kind of programming that would draw audience from Iowa City, Des Moines, about an hour to an hour and a half away to get enough money in the building that it could make money to underwrite the use of the building by Fairfield. And that's the whole reason we have the community theater, that we have the professional musical theater program, is to make the theater
and
available.
And we're so lucky that this happened just like this, because it's gonna be a huge thing, in time.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.